Welcome to Investigating Angel, an Angel rewatch podcast where we analyze each episode of Angel the series with no spoilers. We are your hosts, Leia
and Sarah,
and if you love Angel, this is the podcast for you.
Welcome back to Investigating Angel. Today we are talking about season one, episode 12, Expecting. And I feel like I can sum up my feelings on this episode with two words, wah wah.
I have one word for it.
Go ahead.
Why?
Oh my gosh. Why? How succinct, how prosaic. How much more eloquent can you be than this episode?
Why?
Yeah, this episode, man, why? Why is this here? What is the point? What were they thinking? I have all the questions.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because that's how I feel over on Buffy, because it's like we had this string of amazing episodes. You had Pangs, you had Something Blue, then you had Hush, and then over here, you had I Will Remember You, Hero, Parting Gifts, Somnambulist, then this one. And it's like, instead of it being like an average episode after a string of amazing episodes, it's like a massive stinker. And that's how I feel like Doomed is over on Buffy. And that's how I feel this episode is here. Like, it was almost like they were so tired, they just grabbed a random script and were like, just slap it together. We don't care what it is while we plan the next big episode of the series.
Yeah, I don't understand either. And it's just like, just the whole premise of the episode, it's just so unnecessary. I don't know.
It's cringy. It's uncomfortable. Yeah. It's a little icky.
Yeah.
Yeah, all
it's
the
like
things.
A lot icky. And I feel like the only thing, like the only positives that came out of the episode could have been done in like we were just saying before, could have been done in any other episode that didn't have the same premise. Like the message that they wanted to like convey, or like the development they wanted to convey, wasn't hinged on like the storyline that this episode had. It was just like a monster of the week random thing.
Yeah, and I think they were specifically trying to put Cordelia into danger so as to bring the gang together. But there are a myriad of ways they could have done that that didn't require them to talk about this specific scenario. And yes, and we will talk about it because there's a lot of things. And I feel like episodes like this is where the blatant sexism and misogyny and problematic stuff that we are now starting to see come out from behind the scenes with Joss and others. This is where I feel like you're kind of like, as a watcher who maybe isn't aware of that stuff, you're kind of like, wait a minute. I'm wondering if like the mask is slipping a little bit. And so it's episodes like this that you kind of point to in future episodes, seasons, whatever, and go, that wasn't just a one-time, like, isolated thing. Like, there's actually a pattern here.
Yeah, I feel like these shows, I mean, especially Buffy at this point, is obsessed with, you know, bringing across the message that sex is bad. It's, like, hammered into our brains over and over and over again. I mean, Buffy just went through the whole thing with Parker. Not saying that this is, like, the same thing, but it kind of is a little bit, minus the, you know, demon pregnancy over on Buffy. But it's just like, my God, like, we get it. They just keep hammering in this, like, it's like they're obsessed with sex, but it's like a very like puritanical thing where it's like, oh, but it's so bad. And I don't know. It's just,
And I'm kind of torn, because I'm not going to say that like that doesn't feel like that's a pattern, but and this might be controversial, but I don't know that the sex is bad subtext that happens in Buffy was intentional. I think it's unintentional, not to say that like they don't actually think that. I don't think Joss and the writers hate sex. and are like, let's punish our characters for it. I think there's a bigger problem. I think the writers in general across the board tend to focus on the negative and the bad versus the good in all aspects of Buffy. But it gets conveyed a lot more when it comes to sex because for some reason, the bigger storylines tend to happen around sex.
Yeah.
And also, we know Joss has talked about, like, they didn't want Buffy and Angel together because they're like, it's boring once the characters get together. Like, I think in their minds, they genuinely do think that a negative storyline is inherently more interesting. Whereas I feel like now, even today, I'm watching some shows where, like, you have characters that have healthy relationships and it's actually really interesting to watch. You just need to write it well. And I don't know if, like, having a problematic character, a non-toxic character means that it's inherently going to be uninteresting. I think there is a way to write it that way. But I think the Buffyverse in general, the characters rarely get the chance to heal and be happy. And if they do, the show glosses over it and then says, okay, like 6 months later, everyone's like, okay, they're fine now. And so while sex is the glaringly obvious place that we all notice, I think it's a symptom of how the writers deal with the show in general. Like, I think they just tend to,
yeah,
like, push negativity. And I mean, I wish I could give examples.
But it also, I feel like I think about this sometimes because, you know, we still talk about these shows 25 years later, 20 years later. And it's like, you kind of think, like, if there wasn't all of these very, like, controversial and, like, unsavory things to talk about, would we still be talking about these shows? And I don't know that we would be, to be honest. I don't know if – I feel like the reason that Buffy is still – but, like, the Buffy universe, the Buffyverse is still so, like, relevant today is not only because of, you know, like, we love the characters and – the actors did such a good job and it is such a great show. But I feel like when you're in fan spaces, it's always the negative things that are talked about. Always. That's always a point of contention. People are always arguing and it's always about the negative stuff. And everybody has very strong opinions. So I feel like we're the writers and Joss and everyone thinking, like, in order to make a cult classic and to get people to continue talking about this for, you know, ever, do we have to, like they're doing this on purpose to, like, keep the conversation going? Because people aren't going to talk about happy storylines for 25 years. They're really just not, like, you know, like, wholesome storylines and happy endings and stuff. But the things that people still talk about, like, incessantly today are every single controversial storyline. And especially with, like, all of the stuff that has come out about Joss and the things behind the scenes. So it's just, I don't know. It's like bittersweet almost because it's like we all love these shows so much, but we love them because they're literally so negative in, like, so many ways. But also not. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just being negative.
No, that's a really interesting perspective, Leia. And that's something that I don't know if I have an answer to because, I mean, I think that the thing that the Buffyverse does really, really well is conveying pain and tragedy in a very relatable, in a very organic way. We relate with these characters because they make us feel something. And so I think that that's something that just not a lot of shows touch. And then on the flip side, you see, I'm just going to give the example. Not that Friends can't be controversial, but most people, when they talk about Friends and stuff, it's rarely, at least that I hear, it's the controversial stuff. It's the, oh my gosh, this is my comfort series. This is the series that I listen to when I'm sad and all that stuff. And so I think that I think it is possible for a show to have longevity long term, but you might be just speaking within the vacuum of the Buffyverse. Like, would the Buffyverse gone for as long as it did if it wasn't controversial?
Yeah. And speaking of Friends, actually, I didn't even know that this was a thing, just to kind of touch on the negativity, I guess. I always assumed that everybody liked every character in Friends, but come to find out recently like, people have really strong opinions about even, like, characters in the show Friends. And, like, that's what I see a lot of people talking about these days about Friends. It's like there's, you know, there's the people that are like, oh, like it's my comfort show and I put it on when I want to like laugh and feel like happy. But then there's the people who are like raging online about how terrible Ross is and how terrible Rachel is and how terrible this person is. And I'm just like,
enjoy what you want to enjoy.
Friends. Yeah. There is not a single unlikable character on that show, in my opinion. But I'm just saying people tend to focus so much on the negative these days that it's like, maybe the writers knew what they were doing back then when they created all these controversial storylines and they were just like, this is what people are going to talk about, you know, 30 years from now, all the shitty stuff, not the good stuff. Yeah.
No, and that's completely possible. That's something that we actually were just talking about for the episode Hush, because like we're starting to get into Tara and Willow territory. And so we were kind of talking about how in Hush, like a couple of the quotes that I was seeing behind the scenes, Joss was saying that like they wanted to make that moment with Tara and Willow with the what's it called? The soda machine, the condiment machine, like the most sensual, the most romantic thing ever. And then you find out, but then you also find out that they didn't know that they were going to make them romantic until like two episodes later. So there's some things that are a little bit contradictory that I'm wondering if at times, I'm wondering if Joss, in retrospect, went on to co-opt things and say, oh, yeah, that was intentional. That's what I was planning on the entire time.
Yeah, I feel that that is so true. Like, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, for like, for instance, we talked about this with Prophecy Girls when we did like the Tabby Lee and I did when we were talking about the trial of Joss Whedon. One of the things that we talked about was how Joss has always like called himself this feminist and he's kind of co-opted this term as being like a male feminist. When you look at his works, you're like, wait a minute. And then you start to figure out, okay, is he actually a feminist or is he just someone who recognizes what a really good story would be or who like what subgroup of people has not been tapped into and that I could get a lot of mileage out of it. And it was, okay, the blonde girl, like women in general don't have much media for them that's empowering, specifically the blonde stereotype. I'm going to tap into that. And he hit gold and so decided to market off of that. And so when I look at episodes like this or even the show as a whole, you're like, how much is the controversial stuff actually you going, wow, like I want to send a message? Or is it just like, I just want to walk like that fine middle of the line rose that people talk about my show? So
yeah. And I find this is probably going to be a hot take, but Joss's ideas and storylines were really original, I think, and like well done in the beginning. But as the shows go on, a lot of shit gets repeated over and over again, especially over on Angel, I find. A lot of stuff that has already been done before on Buffy or before on Angel, it's just – it's like he found this formula that he saw works really well and it's just being used over and over again.
And it's so hard to know how much of that is just also Joss kind of letting go of the steering wheel a little bit and other showrunners taking over, because I do feel like the episodes that Joss would pop in every once in a while just felt fresh. And he also is not as hands-on as the shows progress. But I definitely – like he definitely still like – was the one putting his stamp of approval, whether or not he was fully involved. So at the end, like the buck stops with him. So he has to take credit or take flack for
this
whatever.
This is his show. So,
yeah,
well,
exactly.
He created the show, but it's not his.
No. Yeah. So I don't know. I'd be really curious, listeners, what you guys think, if you have any thoughts when it comes to this, because that's something that Tabby Lee and I are still talking about and wrestling with. Like, okay, so how could they do these things better? And is it just our 2022 vision looking back into the year 2000 saying some of this stuff hasn't aged well? I think with this episode in particular, objectively across the board, everyone agrees it's not handled well, not only because of the subject matter, but also just like it's kind of a little kooky with the villain and what am I trying to say? With the monster of the week and stuff like that. Like, I think what saves it is the absolutely amazing chemistry and dialogue between the three characters. Other than that, it's just not great. So
yeah,
I don't know. Anyway, okay. Let us talk a little bit about this specific episode. So written by Howard Gordon, IMDb says Joss Whedon and David Greenwalt were like contributors to it. I don't know how true that was. I wouldn't be super surprised if they were, because I feel like they kind of just were really hands-on at this point in the series. It was directed by David Semel and it aired January 25th, 2000. So Howard Gordon wrote one episode for Buffy total. And it's actually What's My Line Part 1. Can you believe it?
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I really like that episode.
It's a good episode. Then he went to write for Strange World, which was headed up by Tim Minear, and then was brought over with Tim over to Angel when Tim came over and was recruited by Joss Whedon. Mm. He wrote three episodes here on Angel. He wrote Hero. He wrote this episode and then another upcoming episode, The Ring. And then he eventually...
That's another good one. Wow.
I know. He was with Angel, I think, for 2 years. And then he left and went to 24 and eventually became a showrunner there over on 24. So obviously the man's has some talents there. Tim Minear says this episode is fundamentally about body horror. Originally, it was written in a more comedic style, but Joss Whedon insisted the writers should play it straight. Minear says this episode begins to show Wesley as being more than he appeared to be on Buffy, as well as demonstrating that the members of Angel Investigations are forming a family. So that, like, Tim Minear wanting it to be a comedy and Joss wanting it to be straight might be why this episode didn't turn out as well as it could have, because I feel like that, like, tug and pull of two different tones is what caused a very, like, confusing episode in a lot of ways.
And also to use, like, this type of storyline and then just talk about, like, they're saying it's about Wesley. Like, I don't understand.
Okay. That is a pattern that we're finding, Leia, with the episodes that center on Cordelia. I find that a lot of the quotes are saying how it's actually progressing other people's storylines and story arcs.
Like the men.
And that just, yeah. Yeah. And that's starting to become a little icky to me.
Yeah. Especially like this episode with, like, you know, non-consensual, like
non-consensual implantation,
whatever.
Conception, whatever.
Sorry, guys. It's late. It's a whole 9 p.m. here. It's so late.
It's Monday. And we have to talk about this episode.
Moral of my story is, like, especially with, like, this type of storyline where, like, a female's body is being, like, violated and we're supposed to be focusing on Wesley.
Also really, really interesting that, and I mean, I know they can't always plan for these things, but it's interesting that in a episode that is supposedly more Cordelia-centric that deals with pregnancy and all this stuff, it's three male writers writing this and they didn't pull in Marty Knoxon or Jane Espenson.
I don't want those two anywhere near this either.
No, I agree.
To be quite honest.
No, I know. I think about how Marty would have written this and I'm like, heck no. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that would have been any better either, but.
No, I guarantee it would not have been any better.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, I rescind everything that I said. Everything that I said, I recant.
I don't think any of the writers were equipped to write, like, this type of storyline.
I should have just kept this one at the bottom of the barrel and at the end of the year been like, okay, throw out the trash.
Yeah.
So the writers were inspired by movies like Rosemary's Baby and Alien, two films that have themes about pregnancy, sex, and rape. Ugh.
Why?
I don't know. That is the question we'll be asking ourselves until the end of the episode. All right. So one of my biggest complaints about this episode, and I feel like it's pretty much everybody's biggest complaint, is that Cordelia pretty much has zero autonomy in this episode, which, I mean, duh. But that leads to the things happening to her. So there's not much character growth that can happen from that. Passion of the Nerd says her fear of pregnancy as punishment either for sex itself or for her transgressions as a high school student feels sickening and wrong, especially because this was done to her and she had no control over it. There is nothing for her to learn from her actions in the episode, except maybe sex is bad. And I agree with that. Cordelia doesn't learn anything other than, oh, I can rely on Wesley and Angel. And we could have learned that message with literally any other plot.
We learned that message last episode. Or not last episode. In Parting Gifts.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like we literally could have came to that conclusion all on our own without this episode just by watching Parting Gifts. Like.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. It just seems – it's like gratuitous in the way that it's like, oh, like let's punish Cordelia or make it seem like we're punishing Cordelia. Like, I don't really know what they're trying to say.
Yeah, I don't think anybody does, honestly. So Passion of the Nerd goes on to talk about how this trope often ignores the issue of consent. But I think that is kind of the point of the episode, is that Cordelia did not consent to the demon spawn being placed in her body. And so the most violating part of this episode is that it feels rapey. He continues on and says, often cases of the mystical pregnancy swing into the body horror territory, Rosemary's Baby style, which frames pregnancy as gross and disturbing and the unborn as demonic, which doesn't help what you're trying to convey at all, because pregnancy is neither of those things. So it just is messy. It's a messy metaphor. It's a messy way to handle and treat this whole topic, regardless of if you were trying to actually delve into a more serious metaphor. I don't know. I just felt like it just came off incredibly wrong in all directions. Critically Touch says, we're left with a tighter and stronger Fang gang, but little else comes of this episode. And if it weren't for that saving grace of development, this whole thing would have slipped into irrelevance. It just takes too easy a road out on too tough an issue, leading me to the opinion that if the writers could not have come up with a better way to encapsulate the concept into a single episode, it should have been scrapped. And I 100% agree with that.
That's literally how I feel about this episode. It should have been scrapped. There was no need for this.
Yep.
There was absolutely no need for this.
All right. So let us talk about this episode. And then, hey, we'll never have to talk about a creepy impregnation storyline ever again.
Oh, cool. Oh, are you sure, Sarah?
Oh, my gosh. And the bad thing is, too, the next week. Okay, we should give people a little hope. So the next episode is not great either, but we have really
surprise.
Oh, we're gonna not say. We're not gonna say. We're just gonna say.
Oh, okay. We can say it. We can.
What do you think? Should we tell them?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Okay. So next week we are covering She, which is, I'm just gonna tell you guys now, spoilers, not a good episode, but you know, it's gonna be fun. We'll have fun because Prophecy Girls is gonna be with us. Like, so fun. I'm personally really excited because we've collabed with Becoming Buffy has collabed with Prophecy Girls a couple times now, but it's never been for like a full episode breakdown. It's been for like special episodes and table reads and stuff, and I am really excited to hear what they have to say, hear their thoughts. And I think we're just gonna have a lot of fun.
Yeah, it'll make the episode like bearable. It'll make it fun to watch. I like She better than this episode.
I agree.
But it's still, you know,
one star. This one's half a star. The other one's
this
one star.
Is zero stars. I'm zero sorry. Stars.
Oh, okay. I was going by the rating system where you have to put something down. But yes.
Zero.
Is zero. Yeah.
Zero is a number.
This is definitely the one I skip on all my rewatches. There's just no point to it. I don't need
it. Yeah, this is the Go Fish of Angel.
Okay.
Angel season one. This is the Go Fish of Angel.
I was going to ask you because I was trying to think of a season one Buffy episode that would have rivaled this one. And I honestly, I mean, I hated Teacher's Pet and iRobot Eugene and The Pack. But I honestly think this episode is worse than any of those.
Yeah.
And I do think you're right. I think it's on par with Go Fish. Blech.
This is very Go Fishy.
It is. Fishy, fishy. Okay. Fishy, all right. Fishy. We are in Angel's office. Cordelia is dressed so beautifully. I actually looked up because I realized that they've been dressing Cordelia in a lot of greens lately. Ever since she got her visions, the burnt orange has kind of gone away and it's been a lot of like the deeper greens. So I was like, all right, color theory, what is this? Let's go. I think they're trying to convey a shift in her role in the group, where burnt orange conveyed energy, warmth, vitality. Green conveys new beginnings, growth, hope, and unfortunately virility. But, you know, we won't dwell on that last one too much.
Yikes. Started off so well.
It also, you know, stands for money, which I feel like is very appropriate.
Oh, money, yeah. Is it? I'm so glad she's not talking about money anymore, though.
Yeah, we just moved on to the creepy pregnancy
trope. 3 whole episodes where she has not talked about money. And I'm
just
very
her demon spawn.
That.
That's all. Such an upgrade.
Yeah.
At least we know they'll be gone by next episode.
True.
So Angel walks in, scares Cordelia. She smears her bright red lipstick onto her cheek and miraculously is able to just completely wipe it off without having to redo her foundation at all. And I want to say, tell me your secrets, Cordelia. I want to know.
No smudges?
No smudges. Very impressed with that ability. Angel's like, where are you going? Cordelia's like, I'm going out. I'm too young and carefree to be stuck here for the rest of my life. And Angel's like, okay, cool. While you're gone, can you tell me why Mrs. Benson is filed under P?
While you're gone.
You know what I meant. While you're gone. While you're on your... While you're
while
on your
you're
way
gone,
out.
Can you just tell me?
You might as well, because she's practically out the door already.
Yeah, true.
But he's like, tell me why Mrs. Benson is filed under P. And Cordelia's like, oh, that's not a P. That's an F. No, or maybe it's in an R. And Angel's like, okay, maybe we could be a little less young and carefree with the filing. She's like, oh, it is an F. I remember now. And he's like, okay. Yeah, but I don't. Can you tell me why? She's like, isn't it obvious? Because she's from France. And then she's like, remember what a pain she was? And Angel immediately gets distracted and is like, yeah, she made me want to drink a lot. Like, Angel, you're not helping. Focus here, man. We need one person in this group, in this team,
honestly,
to actually be able to like.
We need like one brain cell here. Just one brain cell to function.
Not you
zero
too, Angel.
Right now.
Not you too.
Please.
Wesley enters in still in denial that he is a part of this gang and that he really should just be working with Angel. Like, come on, Wesley, give it up, man. You're not a rogue demon hunter. You're the family demon hunter now.
Aw, that's so cute.
They just need a little like family Christmas photo. And we have Wesley over there holding his Bavarian fighting axe.
Oh, yes. Very proud.
He's so cute. So he's like, I'm just in the area wondering if Cordelia had a vision. Angel's like, no, we're evil free. And Wesley's like brought along a little word puzzle, wants everybody to play with him. Very family-like. I think they're really going for the brother and sisterly vibe. It's so, so sweet. I really love it. So then Serena and Emily enter in, like, you know, these two girls that we've never seen before and we'll never probably see again after this episode enter in. The script calls them LA party girls and Cordy's new best friends. Wesley's in the middle of being super judgmental of Cordelia shaking her booty at the latest trendy hotspot. And then he sees the girls and he's like, then call me sick with envy.
He's so stupid.
I love him though. I love that they
so
carried
cute.
That over from Buffy because him being into Cordelia, like he's still a horny, 24-year-old? Like he's got to be around that age. Like
he's a dweeb.
He's a cute dweeb.
He's
such a little Wesley
dweeb.
Apologist. He can do no wrong. No, I'm just kidding. That's not true.
My God.
I love
We're Wesley. Laying down the cards right now.
Hey, you know what? You know what? My tune may change. Things have changed as we've watched the episodes already. Who knows? Who knows? But
hey,
as of now.
We love Wesley. Love Wesley.
So Serena comes in, hey, nice axe. Wesley's like, this old thing, and then smacks it into the wall behind him.
He's such a hot mess. Just such a heart.
What? You're a hot mess, Leah.
What the hell is happening?
I think what makes me love Wesley so much is how relatable I feel, because I, as someone who was extremely awkward growing up and it still is semi-awkward, I relate so hard, trying to appear cool, trying to like be excited about things that other people would make fun of you for, and then just making an absolute fool of yourself. Like, that is me. And, you know, I appreciate Wesley. I appreciate that part of the gang that he, like, that niche that he fits. Because Angel and Cordelia are both effortlessly cool. They needed someone to kind of, like, be the relatable one of the bunch, you know?
Yes, to be the little dweeb.
So Serena's like, we're late. Wilson practically had to have phone sex with the manager at Lounge La Brea to get us in. And Angel's ears immediately perk up and goes, who's Wilson? And Cordelia does not answer. And we find out his name is Wilson Christopher. He's an ethnoarchaeologist from some place, some fancy place. He's a fashion photographer from LA. So he sounds like this really like
impressive,
cool guy, mm-hmm. impressive guy. They compare him to, well, they compare Wesley to Hugh Grant, but you know, really it should be, you know, the other guy. So Angel comes up to Cordelia, who has intentionally turned her back and is trying to appear busy, and is like, hey, you've been seeing someone. How come I haven't met him? And Cordelia says, because I'm ashamed of you, not to mention how you would embarrass me by giving him the third degree. Which at first I was like, okay, this is harsh. But then I was like, okay, let's think about the last time that she brought a date in and how both Doyle and Angel were basically interrogating him. Like, she's got a valid point.
Yeah. Honestly. Yeah. It's like, her dad, like if she were to like bring home a boyfriend to her dad, what are your mm-hmm. intentions with my daughter?
Yeah, exactly. So Emily hits on Angel. Your boss could give me the third degree anytime, because, you know,
same.
It wouldn't be an Angel episode if someone wasn't hitting on Angel, right? Like, someone absolutely. Has to be hitting on him.
That is the only way to go.
So unseen by Serena and Emily, Cordelia has a vision, drops to the floor, and immediately Wesley and Angel cover for her. They throw the files down. They're like, oh, Cordelia, why down there? Grab the files. And then they turn their backs, form a wall without even speaking to each other. Like, they just know, and immediately start to engage the girls in conversation. So Cordelia has a minute to kind of compose herself, and they don't see, which I absolutely adore, because they could have played this off as like she got hit by a migraine or whatever. But I think they recognize that would be really embarrassing for Cordelia if her friends were to see her like that. And I mm-hmm. think that that is just so sweet of them. So she stands back up. Angel's like, hey, so that client I'm supposed to see tonight, what's he like again? Cordelia's like, a big baby hatching out of a big egg, really large hands in need of a manicure, like completely speaking in code, but like making it super sketch. Like scribbles like really fast down on the pad, which I didn't realize till later. She scribbled it so fast that that's why they got the address wrong.
Yeah.
But I like the little call back to her like really horrible penmanship when it comes to filing things. It was a nice little like consistency throughout the episode. So they all take off. Wesley is so cute. He asks Angel, hey, I don't suppose you need a hand in slaying this big baby creature. And he's like talking about like trying to justify himself, like, you know, not like an evening alone with word puzzles isn't plenty exhilarating. And Angel, without missing a beat, has already grabbed a weapon for Wesley, hands it right to him, and is like, let's go. And come on, Wesley, just join the gang already.
Yeah.
You know you want to.
I love that, though. It's like an unspoken, like, Angel doesn't need to tell him. He's just, Angel's not a man of, like, many words, but he makes his, like, intention very clear, you know? And I like that about him. He doesn't need to say it. He's just like, okay, here is your weapon. Like, let's go. We're going to go together. Come on.
And Wesley's little smile, like, right after he's Angel so walks away, he just wants to be included. Wesley just wants to feel like he's useful. And, he's so cute. I'm just going to repeat that this entire episode. He's just really sweet. Okay, I will say, though, the shot where he, like, turns to go pull his ass out of the wall, and as he pulls it out and, like, falls to the floor, and you have Angel in the background, and it just kind of focuses on Angel, like,
oh, okay. What am I doing? What's happening?
He's like, oh, Wesley. Oh, Wesley. So then they go to this house, confirm the address, walk in, completely break into this building. This elderly couple is sitting there with their TV trays, and they just kind of like stare at them as Wesley like walks right in with his crossbow, holds it right up to them. And Angel can't get into the house, obviously, because it's owned, and then sees next door that there is some sort of demon spawn over there. And then Wesley's like, yes, termites. That's right. We should go. And Angel's like, and we fight termites wherever they may roam.
I just want to say, Wesley's kind of cramping Angel's improv style. He's usually like a lot better at coming up with, you know, on the spot.
Yeah, he doesn't play off him at all.
For his weird, sketchy behavior.
He's just sitting there like, okay.
Termites.
And they break the door. So now Angel has to pay for like multiple doors. I think they break two doors. Let's just add it onto his tab, man. So then we have this really, really cool shot of the windows as the creatures are hatching. And then we have like the slashing inside. We can see the guy's silhouettes as it's backlit, as the camera pans along the outside of the building. Wesley flies out of the house at one point and then heads like right back in. I think this shot is so inventive. And I know that they did it to save money so we don't have to actually see the creatures. And it was a lot easier to just have the shadows and stuff. But I think that like, when shows get creative with things like this, it just makes for a very interesting viewing experience. It's not like the cliche two shot that you see all the time. And it's kind of a nice break from the regular fight. So I really enjoyed it.
It's very like cartoonish.
Yeah. It reminded me a lot of like Peter Pan when you would see the shadows of Hook and Peter Pan on the wall or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It felt kind of Disney in a way. Felt like I was on a ride. Like you're just like floating past in a boat in like Pirates of the Caribbean. I don't know if you've ever been in Pirates of the Caribbean ride on Disneyland, but you like ride in a boat and you can see shadows like of sword fighting pirates on the walls or something. Anyway,
very
I miss
cool.
Disneyland. It's a tangent.
Sarah.
I know. I lived in California. I used to go to Disneyland all the time. It's been a while. I have good memories.
I've never been, not even once.
Well, the next time that you want to go, let me know and I'll go with you. That'll be fun. So the boys finish. They've got demon gut all over them. Wesley, that was bracing. This is like the most testosterone-filled conversation ever. Angel's like, yeah, baby just hatched. Wouldn't want to run into him when he grows up and gets his driver's license. I was like,
what?
Who are you? What are you doing? I think some of Wesley's cookiness is rubbing off on Angel.
Yeah, I think
along
so
with
too.
Some of the demon slime.
Yep.
So then they have this conversation as they're walking out. Wesley says, well, it's not my place. Cordelia works for you, but she doesn't seem to be paying attention to her duties lately. Angel says she's had a lot to deal with, Doyle's death, inheriting his visions. She's young. She's still finding her way in the world. And I thought this was so interesting because I feel like up until the moment that Wesley and Angel enter Cordelia's bedroom and find out that she's pregnant, Wesley is super judgmental this episode.
Like, he
like calls the girls sluts. He gets on Cordelia for not like for supposedly shirking her responsibilities. Not that she isn't, but you know, I think that they made him like incredibly judgy. But the moment he walks into that bedroom, it shifts and he becomes super compassionate and stuff. And I wonder if this episode was written to kind of show the other side of Wesley, because I feel like being super uptight and a rule follower and judgmental has been some of the defining characteristics of Wesley, aside from him being just a complete dweeb. So I wonder if they wrote this to show a more soft side of Wesley. And you're not going to get that with Angel being in peril. You're going to get that with Cordelia.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that definitely does come across, but it's just, I don't know, it just doesn't like really. Like, there was hints of this already in Parting Gifts. Like, I don't know. It just didn't.
That is true.
Again, it just does. I feel like it just doesn't work with, like, this episode, this concept. Like, it just feels really, like, icky.
I agree. I'm trying to find something redeeming, but you're right. I think in Parting Gifts, I mean, the whole moment where he goes after Barney was incredibly endearing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then we are at Lounge La Brea. Serena's grabbing drinks from the bartender. And okay, I want to talk about the actresses who played Serena and Emily real fast, because this is probably the most fascinating bit of trivia for the entire episode right here. And I was actually kind of floored by what I found. Okay, so Serena is played by Daphne Duplay. She was a Playboy playmate in July of 1997, and she's known for One Life to Live, CSI, Crime Scene Investigation, and Lost and Found. But Emily, okay, so Serena is the dark-haired one, and Emily is the blonde. Emily is played by Louisette Gaze. She is the co-writer, lyricist, and producer of the musical The Right Girl. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. I hadn't until this. Okay, so previous to 2020, she was a producer, screenwriter, and voice actor. She is best known for her role in this episode of Angel. She was in Two and a Half Men, The King of Queens, Saints Rose, Tomoko's Kitchen, and Just Cause, like a bunch of like smaller roles and stuff. But in 2007, she wanted to start producing, and she was starting to like write her own films and stuff. And I think that she wanted to go on. I'm not sure if she wanted to be a director, but she at least wanted to like be a screenwriter. So in 2007, she was at the Sundance Festival, and she met a man named Harvey Weinstein.
Oh.
And she was pitching her screenplay to him, and they agreed to meet in his office, and it got moved to his hotel room. I think you know where this is going. So he pledged to help her career in exchange for sexual favors. She says that it was incredibly jarring, and this is back in 2007, and she basically like never really made it much farther in Hollywood, and it is believed because of what happened with Weinstein. He told her she could get a 3-picture deal and he would greenlight her script, but she had to watch him masturbate. She obviously said no, left the hotel room, and her screenplay and everything else never came to fruition because of it. So then in 2017, so she actually left Hollywood after that, because she wasn't progressing, and she became a real estate agent or something like that. So in 2017, the Me Too movement really started to kick off, and she was one of the women that actually stepped forward and lent her voice to the Me Too movement. And in 2017, she decided to use her experience to write the musical The Right Girl about the Me Too movement and sexual harassment in Hollywood. It's based off of her experiences and off of many, many other women's experiences in Hollywood.
Isn't that being made into a Netflix series?
I do not know. I don't think so. It was a like musical play that was only aired for a really short period of time. You can see the like they filmed it and everything. I don't think that is what it is, but I think I know what you're talking about. That's like a separate thing that they're like
a movie. Something, yeah, that they're adapting something. It's based off of either a book or a play or something, and they're making it into, I think, a TV series.
Oh, maybe that is it. I don't know. I didn't come across that when I was doing my research, but quite possibly. I'm not sure. So of her experience and also with writing The Right Girl, she says this: to create this musical over the last 2 years was cathartic. The creative team sat down with more than 20 of my fellow survivors, women who are victims of about a dozen different men in entertainment. Only portions of their stories have been recounted in the press to date. So by presenting these women's stories in their own words in an entertaining format like musical theater, we hope they resonate with an even bigger audience and empower other survivors to speak out. I worked diligently to reclaim my creative spirit again and have audiences see my work. I am particularly grateful to all the women who joined us as contributors and told us their stories, and who will share in the financial success of this show when tickets go on sale. And the show premiered in October 2021. And I'm not sure where you can find it, but if you do a Google search and stuff, you can probably watch the whole entire play. But isn't that crazy? Of all the episodes of Angel for her to be on, it's this one. And then to go on to have the whole thing with Harvey Weinstein and stuff. Like, I don't know. I thought that was kind of eerie how that like ended up coming around. But
yeah, that's crazy. I'll have to check out the play. Definitely. Yeah.
Kudos to Emily. And I'm also just like, I'm so happy because I know so many women completely like lost out on jobs and were completely blacklisted from Hollywood and never got a second chance. And I think it is so admirable and so amazing that she used her experience and is now able to have a second chance in Hollywood because of, you know, her standing up for herself and stuff. And so, I mean, it's a shame that she was blacklisted at all, but it's amazing that like she's able to make an empowering statement because of it and stuff. So I got goosebumps when I read that. I was like, holy cow, no way. All right. So we have the bartender trying to flirt with Serena. Serena is basically kind of like, I'm going after the guys with money. And they have this moment here solely so that the bartender will give Angel information later on in the episode. But then we kind of zoom in on Cordelia and Wilson over in the corner. And I don't know about you, but I felt really angry that Wilson was a bad guy because this guy came off as so charming and so sweet and so warm. It was just a bummer that he was a bad guy.
Okay. I feel like maybe – I don't know if it's maybe because I knew what the episode was going to turn into, but he kind of gave me Parker vibes.
You know what? You're not the only person I've heard say that.
Like, he really did give me Parker vibes, and it was that – like, Parker vibes at the party – in the harsh light of day when he's like talking Buffy up. And I was just like, oh, like this guy's bad news.
I kind of agree. Even the things that he says, like the whole like, oh my gosh, I want to be someone and talking about how like I'm floundering. I don't know my place. No one feels like they belong. That's the point of LA. Like, you know, just live for the now, live for the moment. It was very similar to what he said.
Literally reading like a bunch of memes from the internet with like inspirational quotes on them.
I don't know. It's just, it's been so long. I knew he was going to be the bad guy, but I was kind of like listening and I was like, oh man, like he would have got to me too. I would have invited him home. Like,
I would have been like, who the fuck do you think you're talking to?
Leia's like, this is a girl's night. No guys allowed. Yeah. I'm going home now.
Yeah, first of all, come. I wouldn't be sitting there talking to him. Definitely not.
You're a better woman than I. I would have been like, okay.
You're so nice.
You think I'm so special?
He definitely gives me Parker vibes.
So Cordelia invites him home. Well, he goes and drops her off. But she invites him inside. Passion the Nerd talks about how it's interesting that Cordelia invites him in, kind of like how a vampire needs to be invited in, which was kind of interesting. Cordelia is trying to make the apartment all, you know, romantic, turn on some music, and Dennis is not having it, which interesting because I'm sure Dennis' spider sense went off. Ghost sense? What do you call that? Phantom sense?
Phantom
whatever.
Phantom sense. I like that.
Phantom sense, Phantom Dennis's sense, because he like turns on like Cotton Eye Joe on the radio.
Yeah.
The like least sexiest music ever. Cordelia goes into the kitchen to make tea and is like, Dennis, don't hurt my dating game. This is the first guy I've liked in forever, which I was like, what happened to Doyle? I thought you liked Doyle.
Yeah, that's so true. Maybe she means like since Doyle. How long do we think it's been?
She says, this is the one guy I've actually liked in a long time. I don't think it's been that long, though. It's been three episodes. So I don't know. That's maybe she means the first guy I've liked enough to want to sleep with. Because I don't know that she was at that point with Doyle, you know?
Right.
And then Wilson pops in. He's like, who are you talking to? And she's like, it's my ghost. And then she's kind of blabbering. And Wilson just kisses her. It's sexy. We have the montage of them in the bedroom. And then it's the daytime. Man, these poor girls cannot catch a break. The guys are always leaving them in the morning. It's just like sad. We all know this is going to end badly. Like,
yeah.
Cordelia wakes up, realizes that she overslept. I love that. She's like, oh, going to be late for work. Like, just another Tuesday.
Also, yeah, like, she has work the next day and she went out the night before. That's like, Cordelia, why are you doing that?
She probably was expecting to come into work. Like, she's like, oh, Angel won't care. He understands.
Also, yeah, it's Angel. Like, he... Not that she would even listen to him if he said anything to her about it. She would just roll up whenever she wanted. But yeah, very true. It's not a very firm work schedule, I feel like.
Well, and the only reason that Wesley and Angel even popped by was because she didn't phone them to tell them that she was going to be late or anything.
Right.
And I think it's implied that Wesley and Angel come by significantly later. Like, she gets up, sees the time, and then recognizes that she's pregnant, and then... It's like a couple hours maybe later. I don't know, because she's just sitting there in shock.
Yeah.
So Cordelia realizes that she's pregnant, is like in shock completely. Angel and Wesley roll up. Wesley is super judgmental. Oh, yeah, it's a quarter past noon. Yeah, so she sat in bed for like almost 2 hours. I mean, poor thing. Angel says that he called her, left a couple messages, didn't hear anything. Wesley's like, maybe she unplugged her phone or slept somewhere else. And then immediately was like, okay, yeah, she slept somewhere else. And is about ready to leave when they get inside the apartment and then they enter Cordelia's bedroom. Okay, so I don't know about you. This scene actually really kind of moved me a little bit. I felt it did, like...
Yeah, me too. It was really sad.
The music, I felt like Wesley and Angel, like their faces, and then Cordelia just like looking so small in that big bed, just sitting there going, I don't know what's happening. And I think also as women too, the fear of like how that would feel if that was us. Like it's so violating. It's so vulnerable. It's scary. This is a woman who's alone, has pretty much no support apart from these two guys who at this point, their relationship, their friendship is so tenuous and new. There's probably this feeling of she's not quite sure if she can rely on them yet, if she's even gotten to that point in her thought process, you know? Angel is so completely tender. Cordelia's little angel. And he's like, it's all right. We're here. She says, I'm ready to wake up now. I don't seem to be waking up. And then she says, help me. That broke me. That is just like the
saddest delivery thing. Of that line was really heartbreaking for Cordelia.
And I feel like charisma really conveyed just all the emotions in this moment. So Angel says, we're going to what happened. What do you remember? She talks about how they were at the club. Her and Wilson came back, had sex. She says, he was really nice. We had safe sex. It was normal and it was safe. It was really safe. Like she's going, I did all the right things. Why am I being punished for all these things? Like I did everything I was supposed to. Angel's like, well, have you talked to Wilson? And I mean, I understand Cordelia. Like, no, I wouldn't call him. Like that would be the most awkward conversation ever.
Well, she's also in shock. Like, she probably hasn't moved or had a single coherent thought since she woke up.
Oh, man. And David Boreanaz really just conveys such a tenderness and charisma of vulnerability that we haven't seen before, except for maybe in the hospital room, like when Xander came to her after he had cheated on her. I felt like this was a moment of like genuine vulnerability, and it was jarring because we don't normally see Cordelia this uncertain. She's very sure of herself pretty much all the time, you know? So they're both like, okay, this is not right. We don't think this is a human occurrence. Angel's like, try to call him. The number doesn't go through. And then she says, oh God, I think I'm being punished. And without hesitation, Wesley jumps in. And I think it is so interesting that they have Wesley do it, because again, he's been very judgmental this entire episode. He says, you're certainly not being punished. This is just, we'll get to the bottom of it. And I really appreciate that Wesley like took that initiative to say that, and that he like very clearly reassures her and stuff. Cause I feel like the writers could have gone in a different direction with him, and I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah.
So as they leave, she starts crying. Phantom Dennis brings her the Kleenex and tucks her in with the blanket.
It's so cute.
Precious. Absolutely precious. Also, side note, the blanket is green, reinforcing my green theory.
Yes, the green. Only the things that you notice.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I love it. I'm sure our listeners love it too.
So random. All these little like details I notice. Anyway. All right. So Angel's on the phone. It's really interesting because in the script, initially, this was supposed to be Kate that Angel was calling on the phone.
Oh, interesting.
He very clearly says, thanks, Kate. And then Wesley says, any luck with your police contact? And that was like the only mention of Kate in this episode. And I really think it's interesting, like, obviously, they didn't include this because we're not sure how Kate's coping with Angel since the last episode was Somnambulist. And I wonder if this was one of those episodes that was written like really early, like pre all this stuff. And then if it was shelved for a bit, and then once they pulled it out, we're like, oh, we have to kind of tweak some things because certain story elements have changed. So.
Right. Yeah, it wouldn't make sense like for him to call Kate at this point. So it seems like that might have been the case. Kind of like Go Fish also.
Yeah.
Wasn't that also what Go Fish was supposed to be like, where it was like it was supposed to be earlier in the season and then they had to move it?
Yeah. Go Fish was supposed to be like, I think, season one episode. And then it was supposed to happen before Surprise and Innocence. And then they had to move it back. Yeah. They just kept getting it pushed further.
So like when that happens, just like, you know, trash the entire episode.
Oh my gosh. See, and I mean, I understand because, again, I'm not a writer. I don't work in film or anything like that. But I would imagine like you get to a certain point and you're like, okay, we're needing to just pull an episode out. We've had this one for a while. We don't want to do a massive rewrite of it. So we're just going to stick with it with how we originally wrote it and just tweak a few things. And I really like don't think that's a good idea because your character in your show has sometimes progressed past where that storyline like would have maybe, and I say that like in quotations, maybe have benefited you earlier on in the season. I don't see this storyline benefiting the show whatsoever at any point. But yeah, I don't know. I wonder if this episode was initially written with Doyle in mind too. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, that would have, I was gonna just ask that too. That would have been interesting because this fits with like Doyle. This would have fit with that dynamic as well.
Well, especially because they have Wesley and Cordelia paired up so much in this episode, which works really well because we need to see them kind of gelling a little bit more. Yeah. But it would have also worked in a like more romantic type of relationship, like where Doyle's into Cordelia and seeing her pregnant and stuff would have been probably really an interesting conversation. So they're like, Wilson's home and business phones have been disconnected. They don't know where to find him. He has no criminal record, which they're like, okay, well, I guess that's promising. So they're like, he's probably some sort of parasitic demon. And they're like, well, we're just not sure what's going on. Wesley's like, well, if she got pregnant, like she's that pregnant in one night, she could give birth at any moment. So they make the decision to have Cordelia go in for a prenatal exam and they have Wesley go with her. And Angel's like, I'm going to find daddy. I was like, yes, you are, Angel.
Ooh.
Big brother Angel. So then we have Lounge La Brea. There's that bartender again. And the bartender is immediately like put off by Angel, probably from the fact that like he's attractive, tall, maybe looks like he has some money. He's like, ugh, all you types.
I was
going to say,
this bartender looks like he could have. At first I was like, is this the bartender from Doblique? But then I remembered that the bartender from Doblique was actually like the demon and he died.
He's dead.
So no, it's not the same one. My bad.
The bartender from Doblique was also black. This guy is like a Chad.
Yeah.
This is the whitest Chad.
Very true. I don't know what I was thinking, but I was like, oh, is he from Doblique?
It honestly would have been kind of funny if they had gone back to Doblique and were like, oh no.
Not
all the worst
again.
Episodes are here.
Just the one.
Just the one. The one that we will reference until the end of time. The bartender gives him information, says that basically the girls are the ones in charge. They find the men with the money and the guys hang around them because they're pretty, essentially. They travel in packs. So then he asks Angel, so you the boyfriend, in reference to Cordelia, and Angel says, no, I'm family.
Aww.
Aww, that's so heartwarming. I love it.
Yeah.
It's so cute. I'm like tearing up, man. Love it.
Yeah, it is very cute.
So in the gynecologist's office, a bunch of women in various stages of pregnancy. This one woman is like way too chatty, tries to touch Cordelia's stomach. Cordelia's like, shut up, don't touch me.
Which everyone is like acts so like, relatable.
Right? I was like, everyone acts like she's crazy. But let me tell you, good for her. Because as someone who has been pregnant, people feel like they can talk about your body, touch your body, do all sorts of things because they're like, oh, baby. And it's like, okay, excuse me, you have to reach through my tummy to get to the baby. Like there's a whole other being right here. And it's just incredibly violating. But everyone looks at her as if she's like crazy. And I'm like, no, you go, girl. Put your boundaries up.
She's so right.
So the nurse comes out, Mr. and Mrs. Pangborn. And Wesley's like, oh, that's us. He gave a name. He gave him a name.
Wesley's like loving it like way too much. It's like, we just moved from England.
Yeah, he has like a whole backstory planned and everything. So they go into the doctor's office. They're like making up this whole backstory. Cordelia's like, I'm as big as a house. Everything hurts. The doctor's like, this is normal. Once the little one is out, which will be in no time, you'll feel a bit better. And Cordelia's like, God, it's a nightmare. And they're looking at her like, why is this woman having a child if she's just going to sit there and complain the entire time? And like,
I mean, it's valid. I can't imagine pregnancy being like comfortable.
That is the thing. You bring up a valid point, and I'm just going to like vent for a little bit here. I feel like there is way too much of, okay, and don't get me wrong, I will preface it with this. I love my kids. Pregnancy can be a beautiful thing. We all know this. This is something that is repeated to us ad nauseum. But so much to the point where there's almost this toxic positivity surrounding pregnancy where you're not allowed to complain and say, hey, this sucks. This hurts. I'm going to be 100% real. I hated being pregnant. Hate it. I would have a bajillion newborns if I didn't have to go through the pregnancy process. And so when you tell people that, they look at you like, what's wrong with you? How could you not want to be pregnant?
How could you like be a mother if you don't enjoy being pregnant?
Right. Do you not love your children? Like, you have to love every part of the process. And because there's this like stigma around talking about like the uncomfortable, painful, icky parts of pregnancy and giving birth and all that, not a lot of information is actually shared when it comes to some of the more like harder parts. And that's where we have problems with postpartum depression and anxiety being stigmatized and not talked enough about. And there's this toxic idea mentality that it's beautiful, so you should instantly bond with your baby and you should enjoy every aspect of it. And that's just not realistic, you know? Yeah, so
absolutely.
Yeah.
And anyway, I just on that topic, and this is probably going to be like kind of cringy, but TikTok has been like, I obviously like I watch TikToks seen a lot of like stories, like women are telling their stories about their birth experiences, and a lot of the stuff I did not know could even happen because I've never had kids. I've never been pregnant. I don't know, like, you know, I know like the basics of like how you have a baby, but there are certain things where, you know, some births can be like absolutely traumatic, like just the craziest shit will happen. And I feel like, you know, I've never heard of half of the stuff.
Right.
But, you know, I've been seeing all of these stories on TikTok and it's like really mind blowing. And it really is just shocking that we don't know a lot of these things. And honestly, not just about pregnancy, but just about like female reproductive health in general. Amen. It's just something that like we do not know enough about, like the ugly stuff about it. Because, you know, oh, you're not supposed to talk about it or whatever. But no, we should talk about it because a lot of the stuff too can be prevented if you know more.
Or at the very least, like there's ways to cope. There's ways, like I struggled with severe postpartum anxiety and depression, and I, like my husband didn't think it existed. And so like after my first pregnancy, it was incredibly hard. And it wasn't until after my second pregnancy that I realized, oh, I need help. I need to get help because this is an actual thing that I struggle with. And I just, yeah, again, I agree with you. Like I think, and it comes back to like, you know, sex education. It comes back to all this stuff where like both men and women, and I, this is not just for women. Men need to know this crap too, because 100%. Like our partners, you know, they need to be involved as well. It isn't just a woman thing. And I think there is a very real sexist mindset behind it of like all this mentality of women are to always look a certain way and always to be a certain way and always to have a smile on their face and all this other stuff to the point where it's like we can't talk about the ugly things that happen behind the scenes. And it's just a huge problem. So yeah, long tangent, but I feel like if we're going to talk about pregnancy, let's make it relevant.
Long tangent, but all to say that Cordelia is valid in saying that it's a nightmare because I'm sure that it is.
And the response that the nurse and the doctor have towards her of like, why are you complaining about this? Why do you feel this way? And stuff like that are things that actually do happen where it's like, why aren't you excited about this?
Not
why
just from healthcare providers, like, but like the closest people in your life, like family members and like your spouse even, or like the person you're having a child with. It's like, yikes.
you can say this sucks, everything hurts, and also I love my baby and I'm excited to have him or her, you know? Yeah. Like those things are not mutually exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
So the doctors talk about settling on a name, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh, looks like somebody's having twins. Cordelia and Wesley are like, what? And then the doctor's like, no, there's three, four, five, six. Did you have fertility treatments? And all of a sudden, like, they just stop counting. Wesley goes over and starts to see what's on the monitor. All their faces are like in complete shock. The doctor's like, I'm sure it's nothing. We're just going to remove a little bit of the amniotic fluid just to make sure everything is ship shape. So they pull out the biggest needle, you know, I've ever seen and remove the, or start to remove the fluid. And then we go to Angel, who is going to visit Serena. Why are all of these apartments the sketchiest, most like horribly lit like
it
hallways
looks like all of
ever?
Them are just doing like dark magic in their apartments.
Serena looks like she's about to though. She's lighting candles
and she's, like summoning like the Dark Lord or something. Like, I don't know.
She's like, get this demon spawn out of me.
She's drinking. Okay.
So then Angel walks in. Serena, yeah, as we mentioned, not doing so great. Find out she's pregnant as well. These poor, poor women. And then we go back to the gynecologist's office and the doctor's like, I need to tell you there's a 0.5% chance of miscarriage. It's really very small. Cordelia's like, I don't care. I'll take
it. She's like, please, please do it.
The doctor pulls out the amniotic fluid. The nurse has it in her hands and explodes everywhere. And then it's basically like this huge acidic bit of liquid
like
that just
burning
eats
through
the floor.
Yeah.
What the heck? Everyone is scared. The doctor and the nurse like run out of the room. And Cordelia and Wesley are like, okay, I think we should go get Angel. And then Cordelia's like, do they look healthy? And Wesley, okay, so Alexis Denisov does a phenomenal job of conveying so much with that one look. The script says, off Wesley, more than a little surprised at her turn. But the way that Alexis decided to convey it was this absolute look of horror of like, oh my gosh, like, why would you even, why do you care? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And kind of like, this couldn't have gotten any creepier.
Yeah.
So back in Serena's apartment, Angel and Serena kind of compare notes. Serena says that it was a handful of guys. She said she knew that something wasn't right. Their money smelled funky. She's like, but this town, you know, everything's fake. Things are weird. And you stop asking questions, which it reminded me of that quote that you read back a couple episodes ago, where they were talking about how they tried to make LA like almost like a living entity, because the way that she was talking really kind of reminded me of that, like almost as if
it's from
LA
the pilot.
Itself.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So then Angel's like, do you have someone to call? She says, no, I don't have anyone. The guys seem like they liked that. Wilson asked about Cordelia. I told him she didn't have anyone either. And Angel's kind of like, oh, okay, piecing together that these guys are purposely going after women who supposedly don't have anyone. Then at the same time, all the girls, well, Serena and Cordelia, the ones that we can see, start to double over and are in pain. Wesley is helping Cordelia back into Angel's apartment. He's trying to like make her feel better, says it's all going to work out. Everything will be fine. He puts her into bed and says, just get comfortable and relax. And Cordelia sees the fear on his face and is like, you're afraid of what's inside of me. And then we have like this like weird monologue where it's like we hear like these like little whispers and like
it's so creepy.
And this is where like I was like, okay, where are we going with this episode? What is happening here? It's almost like the babies just like take over and she's like, they're talking to me all at once, like the little mumblings and squeaking and just I don't know. The script says she shuts her eyes, winces. This time it's not a contraction, but some kind of psychic pain and frustration. I can't understand.
I guess another part of this episode that's like very bizarre is like, we don't really get a, like, is it the babies that are influencing her and she's just kind of spiraling? Like, what? I don't know. It just all happens so incredibly fast and there's like just really no explanation. So I guess we're supposed to assume. Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense because it's like she talks about how the babies are corresponding with her. But then there's like a psychic link between the demon and the babies. So it's almost okay. like the demon is controlling the babies, because this is how they end up doing it. They're like, oh, we just cut off the – we kill the guy and we cut off the demon. We cut off – we kill the demon and then we cut off the psychic link between him and the babies, and the babies just magically
– disappear.
Disappear. Yeah. None of it makes sense, but we're just going to go with what they're telling us.
They're not really telling us too much, so.
Nope, they really aren't. They had to have a way to save Cordelia and the other women.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, it was a little ham-fisted for sure. So Cordelia's like, no, you don't know. You don't know what it's like to be a partner in creation. Wesley's like, no, I don't. and happily proud of that club.
This scene was very creepy. Just all of it, the dialogue, the way she delivered it. It was just very creepy to me.
To me, yeah. To me, I felt like I don't know that there's much that could have redeemed this episode, honestly. But maybe to make it a little bit better, I kind of wish that they hadn't have had Cordelia be mind controlled by the babies / the demon.
Yeah.
Because it made no sense.
It just like ups the ick factor too. It's like yeah. another level of like just violation.
Yeah.
It's like that is not true. Only was she, you know, impregnated without consent, like by a mystical
take over her mind,
a demon, too. Or take they not only took over her like body, but also her mind. Like, ugh.
It's also frustrating because I think would have been cooler in this episode is if Cordelia had been able to find a way to get right, herself out of the predicament or
the demon. Yeah.
Yeah. Or to like help the guys work towards a solution. Instead, she really kind of took a back seat and it was the guys being proactive, which again, that's going to happen sometimes. But in a message where it's all about someone that is being taken, her autonomy being taken away.
Yeah.
It would have come off a lot better if she'd actually been the one that's, you know, in control and all that stuff. But
right.
I think we're asking too much for this episode.
Yeah.
I think it just was going to be garbage from its inception. So then Cordelia is kind of trying to rationalize the non-humanity of the babies. She says, I mean, that could be okay, right? Look at Angel. He's not human. And Doyle, he wasn't either. I mean, not totally. And he was good. And I wish they kind of had gone somewhere with that. Again, so many like loose threads and things that could have been like at least given this episode a little bit more depth, but just didn't. So Angel comes back in and they still can't find Wilson, but Angel says, okay, the Serena was also a victim. I bet you there was probably other women that were impregnated as well. And Wesley says the results of the ultrasound, there's 7 heartbeats. They make the connection that someone is raising an army. They're like, we need to find the actual guy so we can figure out who the demon is. And then they look at the phone book that Serena gave them and see the gun club. And they're like, all right, well, let's go check it out. So as they're getting ready to like split up, they hear a noise. They look over at the fridge. And Cordelia is standing there gulping down the blood that Angel normally drinks. And this is just utterly disgusting. And I can't believe I have to talk about this, but it happened. So here we are.
Yeah.
And Angel's like, I don't think I ever realized just how disgusting that was. Get her back to bed. And she just like walks
and
past them.
Order her pizza.
Yeah, and order her pizza. I love how Angel's so disgusted with these, like, just have pizza yeah. or something. So funny.
Except, like, he literally does the same. Like, he drinks blood.
Right. The irony of it all. And Cordelia just, like, walks past them. I was hungry. And they're like, okay, something's not right.
Oh, my God.
So at the gun club, we have Wilson over there firing his pistol. Hi, yeah, yeah. If that ain't a metaphor, Angel comes in talking about speaking of accidents. Oh man! And then Wilson just absolutely like taking no accountability, no responsibility. Angel begins to fight him and the rest of the guys, and knocks all of them out with the exception of Wilson. Jump back to Wesley doing more research here. I love the little jump scare of Cordelia's belly right next to his magnifying glass. That was pretty funny. Cordelia starts to clue in that Wesley wants to kill her babies, grabs her book, whacks him in the head, says, "No one's going to hurt my babies." This episode just keeps getting weirder and weirder. Angel is still fighting off Wilson, and these guys continue to not take any accountability. They fire at Angel, and Angel like pops in full vamp face and says, "I really don't like it when people shoot at me."
Ooh.
I was like, "Get him, Angel, get him." I've never wanted someone to be pummeled so badly.
Honestly.
Except for maybe I think Parker was the last one. Yeah. In this series. Yeah. Parker. I'm noticing a lot of like similarities and correlations here.
Yes.
Critically Touched had a really interesting comment when it came to this scene. They said, one thing that they did like was the continuing establishment of the link between the underworld and sex. Vampires themselves were originally created as a metaphor for the dangers of sex, cautionary tales for promiscuous young women who enjoyed late night rendezvous with dark, mysterious men. Except in this series, the vampire is the good guy, another kick to the cliche's head, and he's the provider of safe haven from the dangers of those types of men that early writers cautioned us about. I guess he's more human than he thinks and a really good big brother for all of it too. And I thought that was really sweet.
It is really sweet, and it's true.
I like the comparison of him just being a good big brother, because he's just incredibly sweet to Cordelia. So then we have more creepy lullaby music and weird alien baby squeaks and mumbles as Cordelia roams through your face. Leia's face looks like she just bit into a lemon right now. Cordelia's like going through this, it's like a refinery or something, and all of a sudden Serena appears and there's like tons of like pregnant women everywhere. It was really funny because I was watching this episode with headphones and my 6-year-old daughter came in. She goes, "Whoa, that's a lot of pregnant lady." And I was like, "Yes, yes it is." And she's like, "Why are all these ladies with babies here?" And I was like, "I don't feel like explaining this to you." I was like, "Oh dear, sweet summer child,
we are not going to go down this rabbit hole.
I was like, "Yes, yes, let's let you think that these are precious women with their precious babies, all here because they want to be."
Oh my God!
All right, so then Angel got his information from Wilson, is at a phone book, and is pulling bullets out of himself as he's calling Wesley. They swap notes. Wesley's like, "Cordelia's gone. She's been mind controlled." And they figure out that it's a Haxel beast, an inner earth demon. And Angel relays the information that Wilson told him, that's Milliken Industrial Park in Reseda. And so they decide to head on over there to try to stop the Haxel's telepathic connection, which is sustaining its unborn spawn. This makes no sense.
It's just it's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, okay, let's be real. Most episodes, if you really break it down, don't make a lot of sense, but this makes no sense. Why is his telepathic connection sustaining the unborn spawn? And they just like poof, disappear immediately. Like they just
They basically just need the demon basically just needs the women as like a physical vessel. So they're just being like used to birth. Like,
so does he have like the eggs in his head and he's telepathically sending him to, like, how does this work?
I don't know. How did they get impregnated? Like, why did they need the men to impregnate?
Yeah, if this is all telepathic, why do they need the men?
Maybe it's a spell. Maybe there's a potion. Maybe there's no good explanation.
Why, Leo? We go back to the first excellent question. Three excellent questions. What?
Why?
How?
Why?
What?
Why? Just why?
I mean, the dialogue, they must have been like cringing inside. Angel's like, "All we have to do is cut the cord." Wesley's like, "We slay the demon and poof, no more evil pregnancy. That's good news. We can end this without harming the woman." Okay.
Oh, I have. Okay, maybe when they destroyed the demon, it was like a miscarriage because the babies were no longer being I don't know.
But the babies should have just come out of. Is that what actually happened? Did the babies all come out of them? Is that what happens at the end of this episode?
Maybe. You could assume they were in that. The water. You can't really see what's happening under the water. Oh my God.
They seem like they were in
more
pain.
And more disturbing. Like, this is literally just getting more disturbing by the every word we say makes it more disturbing.
I don't want to talk about this anymore. I just thought of it like a balloon deflating. I didn't think of it as like, okay, whatever. I don't want to go there. Let's just get through this. I'm traumatized. Okay. And then Angel's like, Wesley, can you shoot straight? And Wesley's like, beg pardon? He's like, yes, I can. I, in fact, do not impregnate women with demon spawn because I shoot straight. So the women are in their robe-like things, get into this disgusting, dark, ugly water, what I call the ceremonial birthing jacuzzi. The birthing hot tub. For their organic, all-natural home birth.
I'm literally getting more scared every time you open your mouth.
Oh, you have to laugh, Leia. If you don't laugh, you're just going to vomit.
Imagine just giving birth with a bunch of other ladies in a
hospital. No, thank you. So cultish. This is weird. Okay, so then Wesley appears around the corner. The script says, he pauses, scared shitless. Then we travel with him. He just sees a bunch of women in the ceremonial birthing pool and he's like terrified.
Oh, he's like, gosh. All right, everybody out now. Like they were going to listen to him.
I know. I was like, Wesley, what are you doing? He was like, Cordelia, the water is filthy. Get out of there this instant. He's like, all of you, please. And then Cordelia's like, we don't expect you to understand. He's like, I understand you'll die unless you come with me. And that is the most vile smelling filth I have ever had the displeasure of inhaling. Now don't make me come in there after you. And then it says, getting another whiff. Getting another whiff, for God's sake. Wesley's like regretting helping. Oh my gosh.
What is in that water? Maybe. That water has the other, like,
that's what I'm thinking. It's all of the gross, ew, like, what is it, like, amniotic fluid from all the other women? That's why it looks like that. I apologize that you guys have
what
to
if it's like that acidic water that came out of her belly?
It probably totally is.
But the women are immune to it because they're actually pregnant. But like if Wesley had gone in there, he probably would have gotten fried.
Seriously. Cordelia's like, we serve our master. The script says the women only stare back at him with something like pity. Wesley's like, please come back with me before. And then Haxel Beast, who is the interloper? And he's like, you think you can disturb the birth of my children? Who are you? And Wesley, God bless that sweet, sweet man. Wesley Wyndham Price, rogue demon hunter. And I'm here to fight you to the death. Preferably yours.
And he puts up his fists. And he puts up his fists.
Oh, I love him.
The best part is him putting up his fists and he's just like ready. Like he's like, come at me, bro. And this demon is like a freaking 20 feet tall, like 1,000 pounds.
Yeah, no, he is with a teeny little pee-pee. I will say, Wesley, did you not see his little pee-pee?
No.
Oh, dear. I think I'm killing Leia. Are you all right?
What did you see, Sarah?
I tried not to look, but there was a tiny pee-pee.
I tried not to look. Wow. I was going to say I'll go back and look at it, but I'm not going to watch this episode again.
Yep, this is the last time you're ever watching this.
Yeah.
I will say I'm like shocked that Wesley didn't move further away from the water because where's the first place he's going to get knocked into? Is that disgusting, vile water? Like, no, get closer to him. Fight him off. Which, I mean, I guess they're going to explode him. So, whatever. So Wesley says, as a heathen, you wouldn't be familiar with the biblical story of David and Goliath, but I assure you it has some relevance to this particular situation. And Haxel Demon's like, let's fight already, man.
Like what are you talking about, Wesley?
Come on, broski. Wesley's like, yes, well, as a point of courtesy, I like to get to know my opponents before I engage them in mortal combat. Do you have any hobbies? Oh my gosh.
No. Oh my gosh. He's iconic. Wesley is honestly A+. A plus for distracting.
He's just proving himself more and more. He has so much heart. And I like, he is a coward. He is afraid, mm-hmm. but he is showing more and more pluck and courage. And I just, I love him.
Yes.
So then we hear a thunk and Angel comes down the ramp with this giant stainless steel tank. And he goes, "Sorry, I'm late to the baby shower. I brought a little gift. Hope you like it." Like a discus thrower, Angel hurls the heavy tank over the muck-filled ditch, over the heads of the expectant mothers. Excellent aim. Lands next to the Haxel Demon. It's a liquid nitrogen tank, and Wesley pulls out his gun, hits the tank, and bam, dead shot.
Kabloom.
Bye-bye, Haxel Demon. And then bye-bye, demon spawn babies. Yeah, it's apparently... That's weird. The script says their belly shrinks as it does Cordelia and the other rest of the women let out a primal howl. The women are pregnant no longer. Cordy and the others look in horror to the shit they're sitting in. And of course, they had to give Cordelia somewhat of a moment of empowerment. But to me, this just kind of fell really flat. She just grabs the pulley and hits the frozen Haxel Demon. And we're like, yay. I guess. And then she says, "I really hate dating." Okay. I mean, it just, sure. Yes. Understandable. But it just,
why? Why do we have to make Cordelia hate dating? Like, why? You know, like, it's just, it's kind of sad. Like, actually hearing her say that line was kind of sad because it's like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's like you've taken everything away from her already, you know?
Yeah.
You had to make her poor and have no parents and no friends in order
to...
have
no parents.
Yeah, like, I mean, you know what I mean? And then now it's like, oh, like, I really hate dating. So they're, I mean, I guess I get it in the sense that they're trying to tell us that, like, it's going to be this core group that, like, relies on each other and stuff. But it's, like, it's once more another thing about Cordelia that we're never going to get to, like, see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like, it would have been interesting to see her, like, date a bunch of different guys and, like, you know, go out on dates and, like, bring new guys around and, like, see how she's going to, like, incorporate them into her world of, like, being a supernatural, like, demon fighter with the visions and stuff. And I guess, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of sad that that's the message that's, like, being put across, like, oh, dating sucks. Like, it doesn't have to suck. She's a young, beautiful woman who's funny and, like, let her date.
I know this is the first time we got an episode about Cordelia's normal life, like, fully about her her normal life.
Yeah, like, what does she do outside of Investigating Angel? That's our podcast. That's Angel, Angel Investigations.
Right. Yes, because I have a really hard time believing that Cordelia is only ever at the office. I'm pretty sure there's, like, the Cordelia we know from high school and stuff, and the Cordelia that we know now wants to have a social life and wants to do all these things and stuff. And so, yeah, it is a bummer they don't show that. All right, so the best part of the episode right here, the guys are getting her desk and the office, like, all pretty, putting down the magazines that she likes, like, straightening it up, making it so neat. Cordelia comes in. She looks happy. And they're immediately like, "Hi, you look great. You look marvelous." Angel's like, "It's only been 2 days. You didn't have to come in so soon." Wesley's like, "Yes, if you need more time, Angel can manage. I've been filling in a little." And then he looks over and sees that the filter, the coffee filter, is still open. And there's, like, a little sign that he taped to it that says, "Please close." And he's like, "Somebody forgot to close the filter cover again." Honestly, hire Wesley, man. He seems to be on top of things.
Wesley would be a great office manager.
Give Cordelia a different task. Okay. So I think we should go back to our original plan. I think that Cordelia should be the one that meets with the female clients and like makes first contact with them. Wesley would be the office manager slash the muscle that goes out with Angel. And I feel like that would work way better and play off their strengths a whole lot more.
I agree.
So Cordelia says, "I'm fine. I just had a great audition for Max Cracks, you know, the little crackers." And then she cracks a joke saying that, like, you know, the producer and her are going to go out on a date and, you know, he's going to impregnate her with his demon master seed and then she can have the part.
And then she's like, guys, jokes. And we're like, not funny.
Yeah, it's not that funny.
No, I don't know. I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but I kind of, a little part of me wishes we dealt with a little bit of the aftermath of this, because this would be highly traumatizing.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like Cordelia would bounce back immediately. But at the same time, I'm kind of okay with never having to deal with it again. So I'm okay that we don't have to deal with
it. But also, I don't know that Cordelia wouldn't bounce back from it immediately, because I feel like this has been a thing with Cordelia where, you know, all throughout Buffy, she was always the one that was like, she's always been like the damsel in distress. She's the one that gets kidnapped, the monsters target her, blah, blah, blah. But we never, Cordelia just basically like just brushes it off most of the time and, you know, goes back to being her chipper self. So I don't know if it would have been in character for Cordelia to kind of linger on it, even though I feel like this is a lot different than anything she's ever been through before, because it's like a direct violation of like her body.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess it would have been nice to see a little bit more, but at the same time, I can also see why she wouldn't, because it's just not like Cordelia to really think about stuff like this, I feel like.
Yeah, unless they really want her to, because in season three, I felt like she really harped on the Xander thing for a lot longer. But I guess I could see how that would be different, because that just kept getting brought up. Like, she had to see them all hanging out.
Specifically, like, the supernatural. Like, I feel like with Cordelia, whenever she's put into situations in, like, supernatural situations where she's in danger and her life is in danger, she very quickly just snaps out of it right when it's done, and then she's back to normal again. It's never like a point of like interest after the fact. So I don't know why it would be like in this instance, knowing how Cordelia deals with these situations, I guess. So I don't know. It would have been interesting though to make it like a thing, because this is, you know, so icky.
A huge deal. But no, that makes a lot of sense. So she says, guys, I appreciate all the concern, but I'm okay. It was an ordeal. I got through it. I'm a lot stronger than any of those loser demon surrogates, though. Angel, I'm starting to learn that. I mean, why do we have to put down all of the other poor women that went through the same traumatizing thing you did? But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Angel says, I'm starting to learn that. Cordelia says, and I learned something too. I learned that men are evil. Oh, wait, I knew that. I learned that LA is full of self-serving phonies. Nope, had that one down too. Sex is bad. Angel, we all knew that. Well, so much for this episode being metaphorical.
Oh, my God.
And then she says, okay, I learned I have two people who I would trust absolutely with my life. That part's new. And Wesley starts to cry.
He tears up. He doesn't cry, okay? Men don't cry, Sarah.
Sorry, allergies. Yeah, just like women don't sweat. Only. They glisten.
Or we don't poop either, apparently. Sorry, was that too much?
It's just, it's just glitter.
We don't fart. That's all it is. We don't fart. Nothing. Either.
No burping. We don't feel pain in pregnancy. This is why people think that we should, you know, everything should be rainbows and butterflies when it comes with pregnancy, because, you know, this misconception that we don't have any sort of bodily function.
Oh, yes, you know. Of course.
No, but Wesley is absolutely precious. He says, some allergies. And they had a line that was like cut out of the script, which I kind of wish they had. As it was fading to black, Cordelia says, so who's up for a little word puzzle 3D? And so she was willing to do the puzzle with them. I know. So nice. That would have been so cute. That.
Yeah.
But we did it. We did it. It's over.
Thank God.
That was painful, man.
I was afraid we weren't going to have anything to say about this episode, because it's just like the same shit. But
it's me, Leia. I always have something to say about
it. I know. I believe in you. I knew you would have something.
Girl, if I was able to get through Bad Eggs, I can get through any episode.
Don't talk shit about Bad Eggs. I like that episode.
No, you know what? Compared to this episode, Bad Eggs is 10,000 times better, because you have the Bangel or the Bangel smoochies. But I'm talking more about like that metaphor was just stupid. But honestly, I will watch Bad Eggs any day over this episode, honestly.
Same.
All right, guys. Well, that was expecting. Next week, we have She with Prophecy Girls. I'm so excited for that one. But let us know your thoughts on this episode, guys. What do you think? Do you think it's a stinker? Do you think Wesley and Angel's dynamic kind of redeems it a little bit? If you guys could have changed this episode, what would you have done better? Do you think there is some parts of it that could have been redeemed? Or do you think the entire episode should have just been scrapped? Let us know your thoughts. And we will see you guys next time. Thanks so much for listening to Investigating Angel. If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to follow, subscribe, and review us on all platforms. You can also find us on Instagram at Investigating Angel Podcast, and you can email us at investigatingangelpodcast@gmail.com.